I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
And it's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E. Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. As always, thanks for coming along for the ride. Yesterday was a bit more of a rant than usual, but it's frustrating to see the truth gaslighted all around us. You know what I'm talking about. Nothing illustrates this more than this thing I suppose we could call the COVID or post-COVID era. Is there a post-COVID era? Not according to MIT, for example. Folks at MIT that gave us this lovely article, remember, right? We're not going back to normal. Radically change almost everything we do. Things won't go back to normal. Some things never will. That kind of language. So, first casualty has been truth and language in this war, as is customary in these kinds of operations, and psychological operations are in full effect, it seems. So, as a companion to yesterday's broadcast, which really was a rant about the very sinister, insidious, and subtle, if not imperceptible, ways in which we are socially engineered and manipulated, quite frankly. And herded, guided, steered, nudged in one way or another, and the ways that we are coerced, particularly with regard to the COVID nonsense and related things, related matters. So the evidence is overwhelming, despite the fact that the overwhelming evidence is gaslighted constantly, as you and I know. And so where are the adults having a discussion about this? Well, Brett Weinstein has his Dark Horse podcast. If you're not familiar, Brett Weinstein, no relation that I'm aware of anyway, is considered, you know, part of the intellectual dark web. He's a controversial figure. even more controversial in the COVID era because he doesn't follow the script on the the mind control and the propaganda the way that he's supposed to, I think. So where the adults are in the discussion is in this episode of Brett Weinstein's Dark Horse podcast that Gabriel shared with me. I appreciate it very much. The episode is titled How to Save the World in Three Easy Steps. And Brett Weinstein has been known as an evolutionary biologist for a while. He interviews Dr. Robert Malone, who is the inventor of mRNA vaccine technology, and Steve Kirsch, who is a serial entrepreneur who has been researching adverse reactions to COVID vaccines. They've all sort of been doing that research separately. They bring their collective, you know, intellectual acumen and perspective and their respective disciplines to the discussion. And what you end up with is a 3-hour and 16-minute well, it's a brilliant discussion. And I think you'll really appreciate it if you haven't heard it. There is a post over at Truth-Based Media published 2 days ago, truthbasedmedia.com, that is, titled Google Keeps Suppressing the Shocking Interview of Dr. Robert Malone, Inventor of mRNA Vaccines. Here it is. Why do you suppose that is? And this is another Dr. McCullough entry, another brilliant entry that goes along with the a couple of things that Larry shared with me recently. Fear is Contagious is the RBN article I mentioned yesterday, McCullough article, absolutely magnificent. And then some of the other things that go along with that, I suppose I'll refrain from mentioning, but you know, at least at this time. So if I had to title this, you know, I think I would title this video something like How Intelligent, Well-Educated, Well-Informed Adults, i.e. real people and not cybernetic Autobots, thoughtfully discuss the issue or issues at hand. So is COVID a thing? You know, what is it, et cetera, et cetera? You know, how do we, how do we address this thing? It's a fairly intelligent, articulate discussion. I think we'll play an extended excerpt of this 3-hour and 16-minute interview on today's broadcast. And I reserve the right, I suppose I would say, to offer the occasional parenthetical insertion. For example, Brett Weinstein makes a squid ink reference early on in the discussion, which no doubt is a reference to Orwell's Politics in the English Language, the quote, you know, when there is a gap between one's real and one's declared aims, one turns, as it were, instinctively to long words and exhausted idioms like a cuttlefish spurting out ink. So those kinds of things, maybe, you know, Fauci back on March 26th, 2020, talking about, well, we'll let him do it in his own words, including animal models interspersed. And so, you know, a few things like that. Otherwise, I think we're just going to offer kind of an extended excerpt. Really, the beginning, you know, the first part of the 3-hour and 16-minute interview. If you haven't listened to it, I encourage you to. Again, the title, it's Brett Weinstein's Dark Horse Podcast. The episode is titled How to Save the World in 3 Easy Steps. I don't necessarily agree with the steps, but I definitely agree with the intelligent discussion. And if you haven't heard it, I think you'll appreciate it too. So without further ado, here we go. Go ahead, please.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Dark Horse Podcast. I am Brett Weinstein. I should say in this case, I am Dr. Brett Weinstein, and that will become relevant based on what our topic is. Let me say a little bit about who I am, and then I will introduce our two guests. So I am a PhD in biology. My specialty is evolution. I have some background in immunobiology, and I am going to be acting today in the role of professor sometimes, student other times, traffic cop, and translator. That's my plan in order to get this very complex story simple enough that people can understand it, because it is of the utmost importance. All right. Oh, one other thing I should say is that there is also a final role for me, which is that when I was a graduate student, I did some work on telomere senescence and cancer and accidentally unearthed a flaw in our drug safety system that, as far as I know, still exists despite my effort to raise the alarm about it. So anyway, this is not the first time I have encountered the drug safety issue, and it is a thorny and wicked problem, as some might say. To my right, we have Robert Malone. Robert Malone is an MD, PhD?
No, master's.
Master's and MD. He is also, and most significantly here, the inventor of mRNA vaccine technology from back as a graduate student. Am I correct?
Yeah, and I'm also a licensed physician in Maryland.
A licensed physician in Maryland. And to my left is Steve Kirsch, who is a serial entrepreneur. And actually, you want to tell us about your role in COVID treatment research?
Sure. I started the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund, and we fund scientists throughout the world on looking at repurposed drugs for outpatient clinical trials. And because the using repurposed drugs is the fastest, safest, and lowest cost way to end the pandemic.
All right. Excellent. So I must say that this is a difficult topic for us to address. We all, I believe, are agreed that something very serious is afoot, and the public is largely unaware that they have been placed into a kind of danger. And we also know that there's a great deal of stigma directed at those who would explore these dangers. I know that I personally feel a certain amount of jeopardy over talking about these things publicly, but I also feel a moral obligation to do so in light of the fact that I believe in my heart of hearts that a great many lives are at stake. There's just simply no question that come hell or high water, this must be discussed. I would imagine you gentlemen feel similarly.
Yeah, I'm particularly concerned by all the censorship, because it's making so that we cannot have a rational discussion.
Cannot have a rational discussion. I think it's a very fair way to put it. I should also point out that our viewers will have noticed that we are sitting here unmasked. And I should point out that actually we are, in an interesting sense, a model of something that I believe is not on the public radar. So if I'm correct, you, Robert, have had COVID.
I've had COVID, and I've been fully vaccinated with Moderna.
All right. Steve, you have been vaccinated.
Fully vaccinated with Moderna.
All right. I am unvaccinated, but I am on prophylactic ivermectin, and the data actually, shocking as this will be to some people, the data suggests that prophylactic ivermectin is something like 100% effective at preventing people from contracting COVID when taken properly. So aside from the risk that possibly the ivermectin I got wasn't real, and I have every reason to think it was, it certainly appears to be the genuine article, I believe that what we have here is a demonstration of a kind of composite herd immunity, where through 3 different routes, COVID, vaccine, and ivermectin, we are protected, and you are doubly protected. So I would just say that for anybody who's enthusiastic about the vaccines, if you're unconvinced by what we have to say about the hazard of them, one thing to consider is that the way to get society to herd immunity and therefore drive COVID-19 to extinction, which ought to be our goal, The way to do it is to get people into this category one way or the other, whether that's through prophylaxis, whether it's through a vaccine, or whether it's because they've had COVID already.
Yeah, one could argue that if everybody just took ivermectin for a month worldwide, would end the pandemic.
Some will find the title that I have given this episode perplexing. I would ask them to stick with the episode through the end, and I will explain why I titled it as I did. I really believe that actually we have the capacity at any moment we decide to utilize it to end the pandemic, and that it is well within reach should we choose to see what is in front of us. But we will get there later on.
Yeah, it's kind of like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, that she always had the ability to go back to Kansas. We've always had the ability to end this pandemic. It's just a question of whether we want to use it or not.
Well, actually, I'm going to push back slightly on you, Steve. I was actually going to inquire from my friends who are closest to this, but I didn't get to it before the podcast. But I believe we probably have had the ability to end the pandemic at any point in the last 6 months that we chose to. I'm not sure it goes all the way back, because I'm not sure we would have known what to do.
Yes, we've had the drugs available. And then the know-how we developed late last year.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so if you'll let me, my pushback as a virologist, molecular virologist and physician and outbreak specialist, I think that, so herd immunity is a noble cause and objective, but if you look worldwide, I think that we kind of have to plan that we're unlikely to achieve it. So I applaud the logic. I think the probability is really high. There's no way pragmatically we're going to get there, and we're going to be stuck with this virus in various forms for the rest of our lives.
All right. Well, here's the thing. We're not going to get bogged down here, because it's not the central reason for our conversation. I do want to have that conversation with you at some point, because I believe what I'm doing is I'm probably butchering the term herd immunity by arguing that somebody who's on prophylactic ivermectin is within the herd. But in any case, I believe that it is possible, based on at least the Argentina study, which suggests essentially 100% effectiveness of ivermectin.
I totally agree with you.
We're quibbling, and it's off scope.
What you're saying is that from a practical point of view. But the point is, my point is that if we were able to, just like we're trying to kind of get everybody to take the vaccine, if we had put that into getting everybody to take ivermectin and fluvoxamine for a month, if we could accomplish that, then COVID would be wiped out.
We could do it, and actually any municipality that could regulate its borders could clear the disease if it could accomplish that goal, I believe.
And it's just a question of, you know, practically speaking, we agree with you, Robert. It's practically speaking, it's hard to pull off. I'm saying that theoretically, if we could get agreement. Because we have...
Well, how about this? Let's table this. I will give you my plan at the end of this. And my claim is that actually there is a way to do this. We just have to think a bit outside the box.
Okay.
But let me just say that, Steve, I became aware of you after reading your article on Trial Site News, in which this is actually kind of a living article, in which you've been updating it as information has come to light. And I must say, this article, I'm always troubled by the loss of the useful term red pill by people who have borrowed it for various purposes that I don't think are legitimate. But this article functions as a red pill. You read this, and either something's wrong with you, Steve, and you've completely misportrayed the data and there's no problem and something's up with you, or if the data is anything like what you present, then the interpretation is quite clear and absolutely startling. So I will just say, I believe that what you've pointed to is accurate, and alarming is an understatement. I would invite people to look at it for themselves. I would invite people to show it to others. And most importantly, I would invite them to pay very close attention to what is said in response. You will get a lot of pushback when you show this article to people, but that pushback is not substantive in my experience. It's emotional.
Crickets.
Well, right. You either get crickets or you get some kind of squid ink phenomenon where a bunch of ink shows up and suddenly the person you're talking to is nowhere to be.
I think the term for a lot of the blowback is gaslighting.
Well, that hasn't happened yet, I think. I think it's – I mean, the feedback that I've gotten is they'll look at it for about 30 seconds and say, I don't believe this, and it's the cognitive dissonance. Yeah. You know, it's the people who took the blue pill,
right,
and are living in the matrix, and everything is good, and this can't possibly be true, and they immediately write it off. But they can't cite anything that is wrong with it. They can't argue any of the points, and they'll delve into ad hominem attacks and say, right, oh, well, this was written by an engineer. He doesn't know anything.
Right.
So, and to me, that's a victory, because it says that everything I've written, they can't argue with. So the only thing left to attack is to try to attack the person when you can't attack the arguments. And that's what people do.
And I would just say that, you know, looking at a complex puzzle like this, one needs some kind of tools. I mean, undoubtedly, in what you've written, there are things that aren't going to turn out to be right. Undoubtedly, you've just written so broadly that, you know, with this being such a large live issue, yeah, undoubtedly there are errors. But the point is, even if you read this thing and you say, what if what he's saying is 50% right, right? It's still so alarming that effectively the response would have to be the same. Something has gone wrong. We are in danger, and we are not behaving rationally. And you can detect where we are not behaving rationally in numerous places that I hope we will get to. But do you want to outline the basics, like the bullet point, you know, the top 10 bullet points that people ought to be aware of that you're calling attention to in your article?
It's so hard because it's just this unbelievable story.
Right.
And let me just tell you how it got started.
However it works.
Okay, sure. So it got started when my carpet cleaner came and he was wearing a mask. And I said, hey, we're all vaccinated. You can take it off. And he said, you know, I just got I got the Pfizer vaccine, and I had a heart attack 2 minutes later. And so he spent the night in the hospital, and he says, you know, he's kind of recovering from it. And I said, how are you doing now? And he said, you know, still, you know, feeling bad about it. And he mentioned also that his wife, also her hand, she'd, you know, hold a glass like this, and her hand would be shaking like this, and the water would be coming out. And she was perfect before. So I have two people. We have very few people in my house because of COVID. So the fish guy, the carpet cleaner, and the house cleaner, mm-hmm, right? And so to have not just one person, but him and his wife, I mean, that is like lightning striking twice in the same place.
So
if it was really a safe vaccine, then what I just saw was impossible. So that's kind of what triggered me off on this. And then I had been on this Canadian physician's call with Dr. Byram Brittle. And he showed this chart. And he said, normally when you vaccinate someone, the vaccine goes in the shoulder, and it stays in the shoulder, in the shoulder area. And what happens is the antibodies are generated, and they attack the this antigen in the shoulder, and it wipes it out, and we're good. But what Byram Brittle did is he did a FOIA request to the Japanese government to look at the biodistribution data. And what he discovered is that it doesn't stay in the shoulder where we all thought it should stay. It goes throughout your entire body. It goes to your brain, to your heart.
So that's two problems. One problem is it isn't where it's supposed to be, ideally.
Where we thought it was, where we thought it was for all the
And the other
previous vaccines.
The other problem, and this is your area of expertise, is that what these vaccines do is they encode spike protein alone, so that the immune system will learn to recognize spike protein and will catch it quickly when one is confronted with COVID. But the spike protein itself, we now know, is very dangerous. It's cytotoxic. Is that a fair description?
More than fair, and I alerted the FDA about this risk months and months and months ago. And
so
we had a discussion about it.
And to be fair, the FDA did not think that the S1 subunit and the spike protein was toxic. And so they knew, the FDA knew about the biodistribution. And one of the scary things is that the biodistribution, like, peaks in your ovaries. And
so just to nail the point home, they did know.
They did know.
I did send them the manuscripts. So... And their determination was
It's a harmless spike protein.
That they didn't think that that was sufficient documentation of the risk that spike was biologically active.
Right. Okay, they did not believe the spike was biologically active. So that was the big mistake.
We now know the spike protein is very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Is biologically
we
active.
Also know. So if it was very dangerous, but it did what the brochure on these vaccines says it should do, which is lodge in the membrane of the cells that are doing the transcribing, it would be a lot less destructive, right?
I think that's fair, and you're right. It's not just the the documentation about the vaccine. It's the prior literature that was put out by the people that developed it, that developed these clones. So they were aware that there was a risk of a spike being biologically active and having adverse events if it did not stay stuck to the cells that were transfected, that got the RNA and made it. Okay, and they used a genetic engineering method of putting a transmembrane domain on it to ensure that it stayed anchored and stayed put. And there, they did limited non-clinical studies to say, looks like it stays stuck.
Right.
We engineered it to stay stuck.
They did.
And they published that. Here's
right.
The thing.
Specially engineered.
Okay, is that... that's generally not good enough in a non-clinical data package. So before we get a product released to use in humans, in the normal situation where we're not in a rush, we have some really rigorous tests that have to be done in animals. And revealing that spike gets cleaved off of expressed cells and becomes free is something that absolutely should have been known and understood well before this ever gotten put into humans. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, that's so what should...
That's the smoking gun.
Let me just make one thing clearer. You said it very clearly, but lots of people who aren't familiar with this aren't going to get it. Okay. So the RNA gets into the cell. It is translated by the ribosome into a protein. In this case, it's the spike protein, which is the best target on the coronavirus.
We could debate that, but go ahead.
But it's at least a very good one.
It's a
prominent one.
Good target. And nobody argues with that.
If the antibodies grab onto it, the most likely thing to happen is that they will block it from doing what it does that facilitates the entry into the cell. So if everything works the way the brochure says, it's a good target.
After about 5 days, though, the antibodies have to be...
So... The whole reason to use an adenoviral vector or an mRNA is not just to generate antibodies. And a lot of the data and a lot of us that are deep in this data think that the way that they're really providing the protection is by cellular cytotoxicity. So you're getting CTLs against it. And that's the reason to use this gene therapy-based technology is not just to generate neutralizing antibodies, but to generate cytotoxic T lymphocytes.
Okay, you and I are about to go down the rabbit hole because this is biologically fascinating, which I want to avoid doing. But you just said the reason to use the adenovirus vector, which is with the DNA vaccines, not the RNA vaccines, which is what we were talking about.
I would call it, it's not a DNA vaccine, it's an ad vector vaccine.
Right. It is the use of the...
A recombinant virus, which happens to be a DNA virus.
Yeah.
But it's the same basic idea. It's gene therapy technology applied to vaccines.
Okay. It's the same technology, and everything downstream of the translation of the spike protein is the same.
Spike protein?
Yeah.
Is the same. And by the way, we have no problems at all with mRNA vaccines.
Right.
It's just this particular vaccine, because of the spike protein and because it cleaves off the cell and it goes throughout your body and your brain, your heart, and anywhere that you can have these symptoms that are so varied, whether it's a 16-year-old who can't talk or see 48 hours after injection, or someone who's, you know, hand shakes, or someone who's, my carpet cleaner, Tim. He's like disabled now. He's lost $30,000 in terms of his costs, and he's going in for an epidural because he's in such pain. And so side effects, the victims of this of this vaccine, they're not being able to tell their story at the press because, you know, Tim says, I try to tell my story, and the press ignores him. And we have these groups that aren't able to get attention.
Aren't able to.
We'll be right back. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back. All right. We are live today. This is Road Warrior Radio. It is Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021, but we are listening to an important discussion. This is a discussion between Brett Weinstein, who is not just an evolutionary biologist, controversial figure, but also the host of the Dark Horse podcast. That's a discussion between him and he's a doctor, obviously, but discussion between him, Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of mRNA vaccine technology, and Steve Kirsch, And it's fascinating. I think this is what happens when the adults in the room intelligently discuss what's going on and are actually believing their lying eyes and ears and actually believing one another. And there's a lot of, I think, correlation to the things that we talk about generally on this broadcast and on this network. And it's a validation of truth and reality to a certain extent. Before we get back into the broadcast, two things. Like I said, the Squid Ink reference is invariably or undoubtedly to Orwell's Politics in the English Language, his 1946 essay, and the extended excerpt reads, "The inflated style itself is a kind of euphemism." And you can feel this, I've talked about this before, but you can feel this happening these days, dear comrades, in the COVID, post-COVID era. "The inflated style itself is a kind of euphemism. A mass of Latin words falls upon the facts like soft snow, blurring the outline and covering up all the details. The great enemy of clear language is insincerity. When there is a gap between one's real and one's declared aims, one turns, as it were, instinctively to long words and exhausted idioms like a cuttlefish spurting out ink. In our age, there is no such thing as keeping out of politics. All issues are political issues, and politics itself is a mass of lies, evasions, folly, hatred, and schizophrenia. When the general atmosphere is bad, language must suffer. I should expect to find, this is a guess which I have not sufficient knowledge to verify, that the German, Russian, and Italian languages have all deteriorated in the last 10 or 15 years as a result of dictatorship. And I ask you, dear comrades, have we experienced a deterioration of language over the last, say, 20 years? Lastly, when the discussion turns to animal models and, you know, of course, there's the issue of enhancement. It's called immune enhancement, stupid. I can't help but be reminded of Dr. Fauci's remarks last March. Remember this from last March? Go ahead, please.
It's not only safety when you inject somebody and they get maybe an idiosyncratic reaction, they get a little allergic reaction, they get pain. There's safety associated. Does the vaccine make you worse? And there are diseases in which you vaccinate someone, they get infected with what you're trying to protect them with, and you actually enhance the infection. You can get a good feel for that in animal models. So that's going to be interspersed at the same time that we're testing. We're going to try and make sure we don't have enhancement. It's the worst possible thing you could do is vaccinate somebody to prevent infection and actually make them worse.
There you go. Remember that? You're trying to protect them and you actually enhance the infection. You get a good feel for that in animal models. We're not going to do those up front. We're going to intersperse those. Remember that? And here are two doctors and another gentleman, a very astute gentleman. They're discussing the issue of adverse reactions that seem to, you know, correlation equals causation kind of thing. If it's not the case, then, gosh, there are alarming numbers of coincidences happening everywhere, including being reported in skyrocketing numbers through the VAERS system, which the lawsuit that I mentioned recently attests to. So, again, the gaslighting of the facts. So, without further ado, back to the interview. Again, it's Brett Weinstein's Dark Horse Podcast, the episode How to Save the World in Three Easy Steps, and the discussion between Brett Weinstein, Robert Malone, Dr. Robert Malone, and Steve Kirsch. Here we go.
To get attention, a large group of people who believe that they have suffered negative consequences was removed from Facebook. So there's very clearly an effort
to 200,000 users just wiped off the planet. Right. Now, if there are no, if this is a perfectly safe vaccine.
So the censoring has been going on for well over a year. It's well documented. It's unequivocal. And
they would have
my argument is that By implementing censoring, what we're doing is making it so that signals can't be detected.
Yeah.
People's voices can't be heard. And I'm of the opinion that we have to have free and open discussion, and we have to have full disclosure of risks. And when you censor that, you cannot have that.
It changes everybody's mindset into believing it's safe and effective. And when you have that, you don't report these adverse events as being associated with it because you eliminate it.
You don't want to be the fly in the ointment of a great vaccine.
No, you don't think it's possible, right? So when a doctor sees a miscarriage and says, I've never seen a baby like this in my entire career where it's so bloody and the brain is split in half and so forth. She's never seen anything like it. And she and the woman was vaccinated a month ago, and she's 25 weeks pregnant. When you have that sort of thing, the doctor says, well, it can't be the vaccine because the vaccine is safe. Well, and so they say, well, it must be a genetic defect. And they report it as a genetic defect, and they don't even report it into the VAERS system. So we never see any of these safety signals because everybody is trained to think that it's safe. It couldn't have been the vaccine.
So that's this groupthink problem. So I think it is a real problem.
Here's what they're going to say. So, and I want to work out how this functions, right? I can take your story. Hey, I, Steve, talked to a couple people who came through my house in various capacities and heard an alarmingly large number of stories that were very frightening. Now, everybody at this table will agree that could be
anecdotal. It's totally anecdotal.
It's not even anecdotal. It could be the result of sampling error. It might.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And so the point is,
absolutely,
how do you detect if something like that isn't sampling error? You find out what other people are saying.
Yes, you go look for confirmation.
And at the same time that you were having your experience, I was having a slightly different experience. I was talking to every single person that I interact with, which is definitely not a random sample of people. On the other hand, we're talking about the woman who cuts my hair, my doctor, right? I was talking to everybody I encountered. And I was asking that my dentist, I asked them, what was your experience? Did you get vaccinated? Yes. What was your experience? And the number of people who had a frightening story was alarmingly large. In fact, I believe it is the case that the only people who didn't have some anomalous reaction were my parents and Heather's mom, which may be because older people have these things less. That may be sampling error. I don't know. But the point is, there were stories that didn't sound like any vaccine I've ever heard of. People who had weeks of fire-like pain in their arm, headaches that would not go away, fevers.
So I'm a regulatory professional, and I do talk to the FDA, and I have good friends there in senior positions. They were aware back when we were doing randomized clinical trials that these adverse events were occurring. Many of them were oddly delayed and atypical for a vaccine trial. This is totally new technology, and that kind of gets at the core. Is I think one of our problems here is the assumption that this is like every other vaccine we've ever seen, and it's not. Very different technology.
Right, and so these these weird symptoms.
It's almost like the syringe. We have mistaken the syringe as delivery vehicle for some sort of a proxy for how to feel about these vaccines. Now, Heather and I on this program, when we heard how the vaccines worked and that they had been accelerated through this process, our sense was, you're going to deliver a brand new technology with respect to deploying it in humans, and it's going to interact with the immune system, and you're going to speed it through this process. We did not know that it had skipped the animal trials that might have alerted us to something really dangerous.
They didn't even touch the vaccine itself in the animal trials. I didn't know.
This is the best business that, training there is. Hell, the best life training. So I received this data package that Steve's referred to that the Canadians acquired by FOIA within about 24 hours when it went live. And I reviewed it on behalf of Trial Site News on request, and I was really alarmed, frankly, by what I saw. It was very unusual, so I had an even more senior and experienced regulatory affairs professional review it, and he picked out more things, like the absence of the reprotox.
And spell that out.
A reproductive toxicology package that normally would be, and the genotoxicity. So genotoxicity is toxicity to the genes of the test system. Okay, and those
test system being the creature that you've injected it into.
In this case, it's the Ames test largely. Okay. So that's kind of level one for genotoxicity analysis. And these are imperfect assays. They're not, you know, if there's one truism in research and non-clinical research, it's that, you know, we all say mice lie, monkeys mislead, and humans are the only things that really prove whether or not something is safe and effective is for humans. We have to do something before we authorize, approve for a material to be initially tested in humans. So what the alarming thing was for me was that what had been done, at least in that package, and I'm told, I spoke to Peter Marks, the director of CBER, about this and about my concerns, and he told me that the Pfizer has submitted a new data package in the just last couple of weeks, and they're currently evaluating it. So I think we have to take those data with a little bit of a grain of salt, because they may have been updated, and we don't know what's in there.
So was this in non-human primates? Because there's a big
It was done. You know, it was done in rodents.
Yeah, but rodents don't have the same affinities for ACE2.
So we're down in the weeds. Yeah. I just wanted to say we should do it right. Agreed. And through all of this, I think we can all agree. Tony Fauci can agree. That corners were cut in the interests of the emergency, and when you do that, these are processes to ensure safety that have evolved over decades.
They took a risk. They took a risk, and they lost. Basically.
So we are going to come back to this. I know you have a background in bioethics. I would point out that, all right, corners were cut. Let us all agree that we were in an emergency situation.
I would have done the same, you know, if I weren't trying to do
the FDA, I ran across an animation, I believe it was the FDA, and the specific purpose of this animation is to say the process was accelerated, but no corners were cut. In fact, the metaphor they use is basically a road, right, and which they have straightened out the curves, and basically, you know, it was a reduction in paperwork.
So it's a cartoon.
It is very literally a cartoon.
Yeah, so and we learned from the disclosures that was a misrepresentation.
So, but it's not just a misrepresentation, because the point is what is being elided here is informed consent. Basically, everybody who is getting these vaccines is part of an experiment that we are running that is actually wildly overgenerous of me to say, because for it to be an experiment, we would have to systematically collect data on what happened to them.
To every patient.
And in fact, our systematic system isn't so systematic.
No, it's all voluntary reports.
Voluntary reporting with stigma attached
to... If you report something, they're going to say, no, they'll convince you that it's not. So I just wanted to say that I didn't just rely on my carpet cleaner story.
Because right.
A single anecdote. Oh, yeah. That was just the,
right.
My antenna went up. And then when every place I went... Every single place I talked to doctors, I said, you've got 900 patients. How many of them have, you know, what's the adverse event rate, the serious adverse event rate? You know, and so doctors have a view. And I talked to paramedics. They've got a view.
Right.
And I did a survey on Nextdoor and found, you know, 3% had persistent troubling symptoms that haven't gone away.
Right.
You know, so every single thing that I looked to verify, it was flashing red.
So you're coming at it from the street level, and that has validity.
And the FDA doesn't look at it that way. They look at it as hang on. One second. The VAERS system, which is the very voluntary
vaccine adverse
event reporting system.
Yeah.
Okay. Nobody knows about that. They're all told to report into VSafe. They get these text messages that only last for a few weeks or so, but nobody knows about this VAERS system, and people aren't reporting in. In fact, when doctors report in, they are told, you know, don't report this. This wasn't. I mean, we've had reports reversed. from doctors.
Well,
without their consent, without the doctor's consent.
So, I mean, first of all, I don't want us to work too hard, okay? Right. There is something that goes on when we get into this space where the standards that are set for what constitutes evidence are absurd in the context of science and the way science actually functions. What you did is perfectly defensible. Had you concluded simply from three people in your sphere that there was a problem, that wouldn't have been.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
That was an observation.
It was an observation.
A hypothesis. The hypothesis is there's a problem with these vaccines, and if I look farther, that signal's not going to disappear. It's going to continue out as far as
I can look. Yes, and when I looked at the VAERS database, and I see, like, it's flatline for all the, you know, 30 years that VAERS has been around, and then it just spikes up. I mean, it's like a hockey stick.
So maybe we should...
And then it's like, how do you explain that?
Maybe we should bring up that graphic.
Sure.
So while you're doing that...
Yeah.
And the assumption, by the way, has to be, for something like this, is you have to assume that it's the vaccine, because that's the conservative thing.
The dreaded hockey stick curve. The plot thickens. Stick around, comrades. We'll be right back.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
we're just going to continue with this interview because I'm guessing that most find it fascinating as I, and this is what should be happening everywhere. This should be the rule, not the exception. You know, this should be the rule, not the exception. This is what happens when intelligent folks get together and try to work through a matter. We've been dissuaded from doing this. In fact, we've been persuaded, if not coerced and manipulated, tortured into suppressing these kinds of efforts, including suppressing the finding of these kinds of things. Why do you suppose that is? This, I don't know. It's what, you know, I've mentioned recently, Stephen Covey and others have identified as psychological error. It's one of the most important things in life. It's like the air we breathe. You know, if you don't have psychological error, there is a reactionary effect to that. And it reminds me of Pike's letter to Mazzini, but something, a way that I've described this in the past is, it's like, you know, the jack in the box, basically. You push the jack in the box down in the box and you wind it up, you know, you crank that. While the spring is winding and it's coiling a little bit more, the tune is playing, and what happens? Eventually, bam, the jack in the box pops out of the box. There is a reaction. There is a pushback or a blowback to the suppression of truth and gaslighting and things. Eventually, similar to if someone's suffocating or drowning, there's going to be a violent thrashing and, you know, someone trying to get air, gasping for air. And so in a metaphorical sense, there is a real direct correlation to the gaslighting and suppression of truth and those kinds of things. And people have a tendency to react just as violently. And bad guys know that. Historically, that bears out time and time again, particularly over the last 100 years or so. And there are many lessons of history, but it's a curious thing, curious repeat of history we find ourselves in, where the intellectuals, generally speaking, who have been indoctrinated in precisely the fashion that Chamath Palihapitiya talked about in the clip we played again yesterday during his Stanford School of Business talk back in 2017. When those folks have been so heavily and completely indoctrinated, and then they are stifling the younger folks and the rest, you know, the minds that they are supposed to be educating, that they're actually infecting with these mind viruses, then what hope do the rest of us have? These are supposed to be the thought leaders in our midst, and yet far too often they are victims of the worst forms of manipulation that they're then inflicting upon the rest of us. So this is Psychological Error, the Dark Horse podcast episode, How to Save the World in 3 Easy Steps. We'll get back to that at the top of the second hour here coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with FrontSight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, FrontSight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited-time opportunity. Don't miss it.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.